I can hear you just, sir.
Okay. I was wondering if you could talk a bit about, like...
What we're trying to do, yeah.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is we're trying to run a campaign using local elections to actually fly the flag of libertarian socialism, anarchist communism, or social ecology, as our section of the anarchist movement call it. There's always been a division about whether we should run in elections, and of course a tremendous decision by the whole anarchist movement that we should never ever take the positions in government. I mean, that was shown during the Spanish Civil War, in which four really great anarchists, when they were absorbed into the central government with the Social Democrats and Communists and Conservatives, actually, you know, sold out immediately. The hierarchical power corrupted even their great political and historical role. So we're not going down that road. What we're saying is that we're arguing as anarchists that the new democracy will be a confederation of community councils, and that we will abolish federal, state, and local government. So I'm running on a ticket to abolish the monarchy and the republic and replace government by a confederation of community councils. We see that as the continental democracy, and we're obviously campaigning at a local level. Like if you were in Canberra, you'd run to abolish whatever's the local government in Canberra in order to start that process from the bottom.
Okay. Have you heard of the Vote Informal Today Direct Democracy Tomorrow campaign?
Yes, I have. That's from the self-managed workers in Melbourne.
Yes, this is. Yeah. They have a slightly different tact in that they encourage people to vote informal.
Yes.
Have you consciously made a different approach to that?
Yes, we have. Over a number of campaigns up here in Brisbane, we'd run a number of campaigns on a smaller scale in actually university student elections, in which we argued people to vote nobody or vote informal in that way. And that was sort of very clever and anti-authoritarian and deconstructing power type campaigns, but we actually couldn't read, you know, the difference we think in city-based elections or any election that's based outside a small institution. What's the donkey vote and what is the informal vote that's an intelligent vote? We're more interested in finding out how many people in the city of Brisbane actively support an anarchist position. So we think that difficulty with vote informal is that you will never know how many people actually voted proactively anarchist.
Okay. And do you think that the people who are interested in the campaign that you're doing, do you think they understand that that's that difference in the campaign?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the cynics say that people never understand whatever's happening when they're being manipulated by elites. We are confident that a small group of people that are helping us campaign are clearly understanding what we're doing, and we're hoping to bring together a united front of radical anarchists, radical Marxists, greens, and ecologists, and feminists, and white witches, and whoever else wants to join it, to sort of put together a united front on a city-based level that looked, you know, the sort of team that gave us Seattle recently, and we'd like to see that sort of institutionalized in a way in which the radical left could actually continue in an institutionalized way to be effective. So the left is so destroyed that we see the anarchist movement as not only trying to attract and build an anarchist movement, but try to keep a radical united left front together as well. So that's one of our strategies. And outside that, I do think that it's pretty clear, believe me, when you see some of the literature going down up here, that people will know when they cast a vote for us, they will actually be voting anarchist. So, and we're pretty confident at present, actually. I think there's no question now from some of the feedback we've got that we'll get the 4% that's required to get your deposit back, and I'm not sure whether there's ever been a campaign run like that in by anarchists in any city at this stage. I think we're in the big league by running this campaign. We're going out there and we're putting up policies which show that the Greens, the Democrats, the Labour, the Liberal Party and the National Party and the Hansenites, that they're all part of the same dominatory and exploitative culture. And by doing that, if we can get 20, 25,000 people to vote anarchist in the city, we'll be breaking out of the ghetto. The difficulty for me is, after 33 years in the anarchist movement, I'm 55 now, joined it at 22, is I don't want to live in a ghetto, I want to live in a free society.
Yes, indeed. Have you found any support for the United Front as a United
Front? Oh, yeah, God, yeah. In fact, there's more support for United Front than there is, in my opinion, about anarchists who've thought about these things critically for some time. I think one of the real dangers in the Australian anarchist movement is that it wants to live in a ghetto.
Yeah. So what is the what has actually been, has there been any growth in a United Front effort?
Oh, yes, actually, my advisors include Sam Watson, who's a Murray leader, who I've said that I will attempt to influence the Australian anarchist movement to sign a treaty with them. He's been my advisor, a former organizer for the Seamen's Union, an ex-communist, who's come over to a libertarian communist position, Bob Carnegie from the Seamen's Union, who came over to us because he found the Corrigan sellout between Labor and the bosses absolutely despicable. I've got Gary McLennan, who's a libertarian academic. I've got Chris Ray, who's the leader of one of the gun clubs up here, because I'm running on the policy of not disarming the Australian population. All of these people are not explicitly anarchists. They are forming a united front with me to make sure that we can develop a radical left culture.
Okay. With the campaign, you don't intend to take the seat, is that right?
We're going to what?
You won't take a seat.
No, I won't take the seat. I need to come. I mean, it's highly unlikely that it will even be an option, but I'm making it clear that I will not take the seat if elected, and that I will encourage all other elected representatives to dissolve the institution and replace it with a confederation of community councils.
Have you come in up against any legal problems?
I'm sure that they will start to emerge. The difficulty they have, of course, is that, you know, I don't think they can prescribe me on that basis, but if they occur, well, that's fine, and if some way they attempt to make sure that I can't be a part of the campaign, well, we'll move back to direct action.
Okay. What has the media response been to the campaign?
Media response at this stage has been... In two phases, it's been quite an intelligent response. In some of Murdoch's local newspapers, Southern and City News, a young woman wrote a really straight piece outlining all our policies, from a confederation of community councils to the erotic manifesto to social defence. She just listed everything we stood for. And I had a very important feature article in the mainstream Murdoch newspaper, the Courier Mail, on the weekend, which has led to a massive response, I would say, from intelligent and well-educated middle-class people. So we're at this stage beginning our attempt to address our policies to the working class, and we're doing that by issuing an attack on Jim Sawley, the Labor Party mayor, as one of the true believers in economic rationalism and a person with the worst industrial work, relations policy in Brisbane as a corporation. So that's been written by Bob Carnegie of the Seamen's Union and some other former industrial workers, and so now I'm beginning to address support with working class people.
Well, middle class, how do you define that?
Middle class, I define it, you know, probably in a traditional sense, as people who don't own the means of production, but have a salary that's quite high, probably between $30,000 and $60,000, and people though who I think in lots of ways involve themselves intelligently in social and economic issues and environmental issues. I mean, I think in lots of ways that's the paradigm or the movement that the Green Party addresses themselves to in Australia, but they try, you know, they have nothing almost to say about working class politics, whereas as anarchists, as we say, class is a central item of exploitation, but the key issue for anarchists is domination. So I'm actually trying to address myself to working class people who in every area of their lives are dominated and exploited, as are most members of the middle class.
Okay. So you don't define the middle class as a sort of a managerial class?
No, I don't. I think the middle class in lots of ways has been gutted by globalization, and, you know, certainly middle class families that only have one income earner are actually being decimated. And I don't see the middle class necessarily as not being attracted to ideas of freedom and self-liberation and, you know, sexual liberation. And in fact, I think in Australia, many members of the middle class are very alert to the dichotomies between personal liberty and bureaucracy. So, you know, they are on the side of expanding personal liberty. And as anarchists, an attractive social attitude.
I only bring this up just so that we can be clear about what ideas you have. With the middle class, would you, as defined as people who have the ability to hire and fire...
No, not necessarily. Many middle class people are employees.
I'm just saying, if you use that definition that I've just said, would you have any problem with these people joining your organisation?
No, I have no problem. I mean, I have no problem with anybody fighting for this campaign who supports the expansion of personal liberty, which is an anarchist goal, the maximum expansion of personal liberty, who hold dearly to egalitarian social and economic values, and who also maintain ecological sensibilities. I don't care from what class position a person comes if they endorse those values, because anarchists are interested, in my opinion, not just about the class differentiation, which usually is reflected in the nature of exploitation, economic exploitation. They're interested in the whole question of how power is exercised, how people are dominated. And, of course, for middle-class people and even for many ruling-class women, domination is a nature of patriarchy, and male CEOs and male workers dominate women. So we need to attract people across class to accept the fact that anarchists are opposed to the social cement of domination. And I find where people stand economically important, but peripheral to the issue of domination.
Okay. I'm sorry for labouring the point a little bit, but I'm wondering, you don't see that there would be a danger in that having people in an organisation that have the ability to hire and fire, they would have a conflict of interests by having that?
Well, it's not a matter of hire and fire. Are your class... class-based anarchist. Is that your position?
I'm trying to get the facts out, because I want this broadcast is more aimed towards other anarchists, so they can help make up their own mind about what...
Yeah, okay. I think it's labouring, and I mean, I think there are many anarchists who are concerned about... I'm obviously no anarchist, person who holds anarchist politics, or any person who holds anarchist politics or sympathetic to anarchist values, finds themselves in a hire and fire position is compromised. And they would have a terrible problem either if they're in the public service or in private enterprise trying to make a living with that dichotomy. And that would be a very hard situation for any person to find themselves who held these values. And you know, that's a moral problem that they would have to sort out. But I'm not prepared to say that even if they were caught in that situation, that they didn't hold a whole lot of universal humanist values that we should appeal to.
Okay.
I'm not prepared to say to people that because they have dichotomies that they haven't solved in their lives, that we shouldn't link to them as an anarchist movement. In fact, it seems to me if we aren't generous about those sorts of issues, we will be forever a ghetto-based movement.
Okay. I was wondering, to go into the technicalities of the campaign, what was the process for becoming a candidate for mayor? Were there any hurdles to overcome?
No. We're going to find 10 anarchists who are actually enrolled and haven't been boycotting elections for a long time. But I found a number of those people, a lot of the older people and younger people, and who are interested in the campaign, and a number of people, obviously, who are my advisors who aren't strictly coming from the anarchist movement, and they had always regarded it as important to cast your vote pragmatically, like they would vote independent, and then they'd vote finally Labour Party, even though the Labour Party is a disgusting party of globalisation, they'd put Labour before they'd put the Tories. So there are lots of left-wing radical pragmatists prepared to form a united front with the anarchists on this issue.
Do you see the campaign as any more than a consciousness-raising one?
Oh, yes. It's more than a consciousness-raising one. It is actually an attempt, as I said earlier, to break out of something the Australian anarchist movement has been in for a long time, and that is it's a culture of thinking that if you stand just against authority, that you are an anarchist. To me, it's clear that we have to put across policies based in a belief in libertarian socialism and an ecological community. And I don't think a lot of anarchists in Australia thought through those issues. So, I mean, it's not just consciousness raising, it's also challenging power. If for some reason if for some reason in this election, we should be the group of people who actually whose preferences decide this election, and there are community and ecological and social issues which we can influence other political movements to agree to what we want done in order to give them our preferences, then we will exercise that pragmatic power.
Okay. I was wondering, for people who are interested, could you tell us a little about yourself and your activist history?
Well, I've been in the anarchist movement since I've been 22. When I left school, I was, I would describe myself as a left liberal. I believed in liberal democracy. The Vietnam War taught me, understandably, that what we're confronted with here is that Western democracy was in fact a sham, and that all the governments call themselves Western democracies who are allied to American imperialism were just slaughtering the Vietnamese people in their struggle for freedom and self-determination. There was only one place for me to go because I was anti-totalitarian, I was anti-fascist, and I was anti-Marxist-Leninist. So I went to the anarchist position of direct democracy, and of course that's what I'm arguing for now in this campaign. I maintained that position from 22 years of age until today. It's 32 years in the organized anarchist movement. I'd say I'd have to be one of the elders in the anarchist movement of Australia. In between then, I took part also in the Czech resistance against Russian imperialism and fought with a group of Pilsen and Prague anarchists against the Russian invasion of Czechoslovakia for the same reasons. And on returning to Australia, I actually started to think about whether, in fact, the anarchist movement in Australia was both an individualist movement that saw themselves as being anarchists because they were anti-authoritarian, but they had nothing to say about how they're going to institute a new egalitarian utopian community. I was attracted to working that out. So I've been part of the self-managed workers in Brisbane, and then I in the Institute of Social Ecology, which attempts to answer a simple question which a lot of workers and people ask us, is that is, if we're going to replace capitalism and state capitalism, what are we going to put in its place? And I'm interested in that question, and I'm influenced by the work of Murray Bookchin and Noam Chomsky and other people like that who have attempted to answer that question for ordinary people, because otherwise people are not going to take it seriously. So I've been now, when I realized that we used to work at the point of production, we used to call for a Federation of Workers' Councils. Yeah, a Federation of Workers' Councils. And when I realized, of course, that was very class-orientated, and it didn't, in fact, take into consideration that if we make ecological decisions about the whole of the economy, they'll have to be community decisions, not point of production decisions. So I moved over to that position. I was influenced by the feminist and ecological movement to realize that domination was a central question, not class. And that's where I've come to today. I'd call myself a modern social ecologist anarchist, yeah.
Okay. A lot of anarchists have a very strong belief in anarcho-syndicalism. What is your opinion towards that?
I call it anarcho-anachronism. The anarcho-syndicalists lost terribly and bravely in Spain and have in no way, I think, integrated modern feminist theory nor modern social ecology theory, ecological theory. I think anarcho-syndicalists have a lot to learn yet because, as I said, the wider decisions of economy and social responsibility will be decided by community councils, not workers' councils. The workers' councils actually, once we decide what goods we're going to produce that aren't toxic and aren't antisocial and aren't liberatory to individuals in terms of intrinsic value of work, these will be decided by community councils, not by workers' councils. So anarcho-syndicalists base their whole strategy at the point of production. And to me, that is not only politically wrong in theory about how democracy will work in an anarchist society, but strategically and tactically wrong as well.
Okay. I'm talking about tactics. Many anarchists would be, I believe, interested in the way that you're actually...
Could you repeat that? I'm sorry. I just had trouble hearing it.
Many anarchists, I'm sure, would be interested in the organizing tactics that you're actually using on the ground, considering that a lot of us find it hard to get active a lot of the time. What are the skills and what are you actually doing from day to day?
Probably in the history of Australian anarchism since the Second World War, Brisbane, strangely enough, has had a very strong base. I mean, in the self-managed workers up here a long time ago, we probably had 300 members. I don't think there's any anarchist organisation in Australia had that many. And it's gone back and forth, and, you know, small. We're small now. We're probably 35, you know, 50. What we've managed to do, though, is keep growing, keep integrating new radical debate and notions of what would inspire people to believe in freedom and social economic justice and ecological sensibility. So that's been our strength, I think. That's probably why today, and I don't say this arrogantly, but out of the work we've done up here, we are able to argue such a coherent political position on all issues. When you see all our actual political statements, we cover everything from democracy to social defence, you know.
Okay.
And these have come out of political experience and political struggle in the last 30 years.
To go into a bit more specifics, how does the campaign run?
I'm having trouble hearing you now.
And to go into the specifics, how are the day-to-day running?
Day-to-day campaign? We're running it by building up the core group of campaign supporters, and they're people who we notify about each event. Like we moved to the ceremony last week of a treaty between the Murrays and the anarchist movement. Then this week we've just finished faxing 200 trade union organisations in Brisbane and media groups about two programs. One, our program attacking the ALP's mayor Sawley as one of the worst employers in Brisbane because of his support for economic rationalism, and as well as that, we're also faxed out a statement that we're marching on Sunday to stop a tourist tram that's going to gut our suburb called Brisrail. We defeated the National Party 2 years ago, and now the ALP is trying to sneak it back up in the peninsula. So what we do is we fax all of the media, student and traditional media and trade unions. There's probably 200 media releases gone out. And then we ring our supporter group, and they become the core of the group that actually organise and leaflet. We're putting out a few thousand brochures in this area just to present and posters, and they'll do that work, and then they'll march as well on Sunday, and then we'll move to the next stage of the campaign.
I think it's an important question. Where are you getting the most effect from, by working through the media or by doing...
Well, the effect that's... We can't read how well the media's doing, working for us. I mean, because we'll know that on the day of the election, I suppose. But we have our own media. The Institute for Social Ecology has, for 6 years now, run two of the major local newspapers in this town. And I don't think any left-wing party, including the Leninist groups like the DSP or the ISO, have that capacity. We actually print the local newspaper in two major inner city suburbs. One is called West End and one is called New Farm. We put out 6,000 copies of a newspaper every month, which prints the columnists who I'm talking about, like anarchist columnists, Marxists, libertarian Marxists, feminists and ecologists, and community columnists. And the Institute of Social Ecology actually owns those newspapers. And those newspapers, I think, have been crucial in the last period of time to building a political base in community politics for the anarchist movement in Brisbane.
I've actually had the opportunity to look at one of those newspapers, the West End News.
Mm.
I found it very interesting that the amount of advertising in it and just the fact it had advertising at all.
Yes.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying I was just very surprised that this happened.
Well, initially, a whole lot of anarchists wouldn't even read it up here, individualist anarchists, because we actually took commercial advertising. Of course, those groups are no longer in existence in our area, but the fact is that we see the fact that we actually control two major newspapers which flag anarchist politics every month in an organised way. People regard the anarchist movement in West End as normal, or we won't use the word num, as it's not unusual for them to think that holding anarchist views is a decent political position. You understand?
Yeah.
I'm the chairperson of the actual leading organisation of community resistance. They elected me, an anarchist, with full knowledge, because I'm a very prominent anarchist in Brisbane. So the level, not that most people in this area are anarchists, but I think a lot will vote for us. But that work has come out of the fact that we run these newspapers, that we run the West End Street Festival. We run that for 14 years. That's the first thing we did. And we also are the people who lead the struggle against the developers and government in this area. So What I'm trying to say as the anarchist movement of Australia is you just can't have moral anger and travel. You've got to put your roots down. You've got to institutionalize yourselves. You've got to become respected in the wider area of politics, okay? And in no way means that you give up your politics, because it should be obvious to you when you read that paper that we have this very strange phenomenon that local business in these communities actually fund that paper, knowing full well that we're anti-capitalist, very clear in the paper, and yet they know the paper is so well read by ordinary people who live in those areas. In fact, snapped up out of our boxes so incredibly, I haven't seen such respect for a left-wing newspaper for ages, is they have to advertise in it.
Yeah, I found it quite interesting that it wasn't just small, what we'd call, you know, what the Americans call mom-and-pop businesses, but they're also multinationals like Dendy. My next question would be, I've actually run out of questions.
Well, if you want to know why we'd run with those people, I mean, it's very simple. Our policy on censorship, which we've also explained, you might have seen some of our stuff on the Nazis. We run the Nazis. The Nazis attack us politically, and we run their letters and da-da-da, and we run the capitalists. We hold no censorship. We will not censor anything from any political position. The only time we will ever censor our movement is it's a military policy. If actually we are attacked by any of those organizations in a physical way to injure members as people in our organization, we will respond by armed defense.
Okay.
And short of that, we have no worry about any of these people advertising in or printing their copy in our paper. To us, that is a sign that the anarchist movement is opposed to censorship of any form.
Okay. Just quickly, I did notice the letter from the Nazi thing. Is that... I've never heard of that group before. Are they actually a big group, or are they just...
No. Well, they're one of the... They're actually, I think, the body that's recognised by, you know, the Austrians and Germans. They're actually the real Nazis. There's been some little guy over here running Nazi letters to us and everything, and of course the strange thing is he's saying, you know, we don't officially recognize this person, and but our attitude in any of that stuff, whether it would be, you know, an article from a PR company, from a globalist or a Nazi, short of when they start shooting at us, we will print everything that anybody gives us.
Okay. I actually just stumbled across the work that you were doing up in Brisbane. I haven't really ever heard of you before. This is over the internet. How do you reach out to people in other states, considering that you...
I've been, as I say, in the movement for 33 years. I've been at every national anarchist conference since the 1960s. So, I mean, I don't know how young you are, but we call them roughly every 3 or 4 years. And, I mean, I was the chairperson of the visit of Noam Chomsky to our last national conference in Sydney in 1996. So I think there'll be a national conference again soon. And normally the national conferences come out of the two organized socialist tendencies in the anarchist movement. One of the anarcho-syndicalists, who I respect because they are socialists, I just think they're wrong about where they place their analysis and their energies. And I come from the anarchist-communist tendency. And those two tendencies have been the people who always tend to call the conferences, okay? Then you have that mass group of young people, or not only young people, people in Australia who I think it's very much the tradition of bourgeois liberalism, who call themselves anarchists because they think they're against all authority, but they're not even socialists. You understand what I mean? So
yes.
We tend to be the group who the anarcho-syndicalists and the... Oh, a great tradition in Australia. They go back to the Wobblies in the First World War who powerfully and heroically fought against Billy Hughes along with the Irish Nationalists against the Imperialist War and then forward from there. My argument of the anarcho-syndicalists is simply philosophical and tactical. It's not as to do to their morality or their courage. But we're the groups who call the meetings. I would say soon, probably in 1 or 2 years, there'll be a review national conference, and if you're in the anarchist movement, then we'll probably meet each other. But I've been instrumental in both calling those conferences and disseminating anarchist ideas since the 1960s.
I was just wondering where these meetings usually held.
Well, they're held in different cities. They're usually held in Sydney and Melbourne, usually, because it makes it easier for people to travel. I mean, we've never held one in Brisbane, and yet the Brisbane anarchist movement's always been one of the most powerful. But out of respect for the fact that people have to travel long distances, they've used
I'm actually a little bit too young to have gone to the Chomsky one, and I don't think there's been one since then. So.
No, that's right. 1996 was the last one. But soon, you know, what we usually say about that is people go back to the... I mean, that was great. That was a great meeting. There was, you know, there were 400 or 500 libertarians come to that. The one that the self-managed workers held in, I think, the end of the 80s was... better in a mass way. There's probably 3,000 or 5,000 people at that, but the Sydney one was mainly delegates, and I thought Chomsky gave a very conservative speech. I was the chairperson up on the platform, and I felt like saying, hang on, you know, we need a more radical speech, and this was more an address to left liberals. But soon, people like the anarcho-syndicalists in Sydney and Melbourne and the self-managed workers in Melbourne and ourselves, well, you know, we'll discuss things and we'll, someone will suggest a conference, you know, and then we'll throw energies behind that. And it's during those conferences, in the workshops and the different discussions that take place in the plenary sessions, that policy is usually discussed openly and sometimes aggressively and sometimes just assertively and sometimes, you know, with fondness and things like that, and then we go out back to our grassroots, because it doesn't matter how many national conferences we have, if we can't build a base somewhere, in a factory, a school, you know, a union, an institution, a local area, we're a ghetto.
Yeah, I was wondering, would you say that these conferences have failed over the years since?
No, they haven't failed because. You know, anarchism's been alive since 1886. Different people from, you know, meeting in little cafes in the 1890s to the present day have tried to keep the democratic currency of anarchism alive. And I think anarchism, it basically, in the sense that it argues that the basic condition of freedom, that is a need for freedom, is the essence of political experience and morality. So the anarchists are absolutely right about that, and that's why I stay with the movement, because, I mean, there's been a lot of disappointing experiences about the anarchist movement. I think their ghettoism is one thing that almost drove me from it. So I choose to work with people who don't want to live in the ghetto. And interestingly enough, I find a lot of those people outside the anarchist movement, but I find a lot in the anarchist movement as well. So I think that the conferences haven't been a failure. At this stage, one of the biggest difficulties we have is that people seem to be passive in the relationship to this extraordinary attack on them at present through the globalists. And I don't see on the left, though, how anarchists won't play some major role in some united alliance, if not the primary role, because of their wonderful principled moral and historical stand against domination and oppression, that they won't play a major role in the regroupment of a radical left in this country and many countries. Now, that's a hope, because at this stage it could be that we may face a fascist world again. I don't know. And that people may choose to not choose freedom, and they may choose fear again, and they'll choose reactionary and authoritarian modes of political and economic organisation. So it's not inevitable that we will have a fundamental egalitarian social change, but the anarchists in their social theory and their personal courage and their social courage, to me, have been the standard bearers of the best of the left.
Yeah, talking about the way that the conferences are, as a young anarchist, I find it very both sad and annoying that there seems to be this lost history of anarchism that I find very hard to learn about, which in fact, this interview is part of my personal attempt just to learn more about our history.
Yeah. Well, see, that's true about democratic currency in any society. I call the wider notion, my word for it, is democratic currency of ideas. And you know, it's a hard one, because in not only the history of your own country, but the history of the world, to know that tradition. It's something that has to be deeply taught. I suppose I've been fortunate enough as a trained historian to find that history for myself. And one of the things I do, I teach in the Institute for Social Ecology, and I actually teach an anarchist history of the world. But it is a difficult thing. And see, it's very hard in any authoritarian culture for younger people to make contact with the best traditions of moral decency and egalitarianism, which things like anarchism and radical Marxism and feminism and ecology stand for. So, and sometimes it's like a lucky dip, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If in a culture, say, where that isn't a mass movement, you know what I mean? And in Australia, anarchism has never been a mass movement. That's one of the, if only, you know, it had been securely based in an industry or a union or a university or in a community, it might have been easy to pass on a lot of those ideas.
Okay. Well, to this has been very interesting. To wrap up our interview, how can people help out with the campaign specifically or any anarchist activity in Brisbane?
Well, we call it, what we'd like you to do, and what we're calling them, because we're internationalists. I mean, we help the Chiapas guerrillas. We help, we went to the conference. We had two conferences in Lisbon and Vermont. We have an internationalist attitude, and this is a strategy. What we're running in Brisbane is going to go in Montreal, Lisbon, Paris. There's a number of anarchists going to be starting to push up this position out of the social ecology movement, Norway. What we're saying about this campaign, and I'm very pleased, and thank you for ringing, is that it's a continental campaign. We're trying to say we need the united front of something like happened at Seattle, which a lot of it came out of the anarchist movement, from the EZLN groups to the anarcho-syndicalist wobbly groups, and then the green groups joined them, and the trade union groups tried to control it. We need that sort of united front in every place we can in Australia in order to start pushing up these politics. Now, these are not just politics for a local election. To me, these are the politics you push in student unions to dissolve them and replace them with a self-managed democracy. You push it in trade unions, dissolve the left, the centre and the right, and build a self-managed democracy in the union movement. You know, in social institutions and community institutions, these are the politics we must push from the grassroots to build a mass movement. So your role to help us and our role to help you is to try and encourage you and reinforce you to do that in Canberra while we do it in Brisbane. So by this interview, I hope I'm helping you. Sometime in the future, you may be able to help us.
Yeah. I was wondering, just off the top of my head, I was thinking, is there any likely cooperation between Vote Informal Today, Direct Democracy Tomorrow, and anything that, and the sort of position that you're running with election campaigns?
Any cooperation between?
Vote Informal Today, Direct Democracy Tomorrow, and the...
Oh, yes. No, well, I mean, Joe, who's running it, Joe Toscano, is a dear friend of mine. I mean, he was in the anarchist communist group up here, self-managed workers, and he went to Melbourne and a number of other people and formed one down there. He came from Brisbane and in fact, was a really strong... I mean, the medical student... came out of a section of medical students who are in the anarchist communist movement. And they were flat out just finding time to bloody scratch themselves, and yet they managed to carry out an enormous amount of work in the health industry and generally. All I'd say is, I think people can tactically decide whatever campaigns they want to run. My view is, though, that if you want to try and get people to understand that the institutions are hierarchical, dominating and exploiting, I think we've got to make it clear what those policies are. I think by just inviting informal, you can't differentiate between the people who would actively support such a campaign and the people who would vote with ignorance.
Yeah. Okay. So have you got any contact addresses if people would like to get in contact with you?
Yeah, a contact address if they'd like to. Well, the phones are Brisbane, 07-3844-973. There's an email, internet services, HTTP, is it?
Yep.
:// www.crosswinds.net. What is it? /nhappyanarchy. You know, that's where you picked it up, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe you can put that on for us because I can't quite read it here. I haven't got my glasses. And, you know, people can ring up and we'll certainly talk to them. And if they want to interview us, it's great that you're interviewing us. All the local, the student media and the Triple Z up here, they're all doing that too. But the lucky thing for us is we're breaking into the mainstream media.
Okay. Well, considering that this program will be going on to the international, I'll be putting this up on the internet so other international people can, activists can hear it. Is there a message to people in other countries?
Well, only, you know, I mean, this is our experience about how to get the anarchist movement out of a subculture and into the mainstream. Because as I say, I'm 55. I have got 25 years left. I'd love to live in a free society. So this is an attempt to see whether our moral, you know, that people are excited by the morality and the political coherence of our position, and also to try and give some guidelines, and I call it, I suppose, leadership in that sense, to try and experience whether, in fact, this is the way to get people socially and in the community to endorse our views, and not only to endorse them, but to take them up and start living by them.
Okay. Oh, excellent. Thank you very much.
James, good night. Bye.
Bye.